views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. Earlier this year, I began a new podcast series covering my book, Break Free of Parenting Pressures. Today, I'm going to be starting chapter 6. So if you are someone who prefers to read a book in order, you might want to head back to the beginning of June 2019 and start listening from there. If you're fine with going out of order, and I really truly believe that these topics do stand just fine on their own, then you should be fine starting right here. I'm optimistic whatever you decide to do, you will enjoy this reading. And if it's not your thing, I really hope that you'll return to my show in the fall when I'll likely switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. So without further ado, here we go. Break free of parenting pressures. Embrace your natural guidance. Chapter 6, A Powerful Topic. My bath time trials. Bath time with my kids provided me with more opportunity to practice parenting skills than any other activity. Both of my kids resisted getting into the bath from the beginning, no matter how fun or enticing I tried to make it. At first, I took it personally and decided I must be doing something wrong. It didn't help that all my friends' kids seemed to love their baths and would even ask to take one for enjoyment. After a while, I realized that while my kids had started out with fairly common resistance, I had let it turn into a power struggle and had created a problem that was much bigger than it needed to be. Sharing the things I tried to make bath time work in our house might be helpful or at least enjoyable for other parents to hear about. So here's some of the things that I tried. Making it fun. I bought all kinds of bath toys, stickers, foam, and other items to make bath time fun and exciting. Once the kids were in the bath, they could stay there for hours and never run out of things to do. Unfortunately, my challenge was in getting my kids into the tub, not keeping them in there. So this solution did not really solve my problem. Reasoning. I would always start out trying to gain compliance with my child in a cheerful and friendly manner. I would explain why baths were important, that they didn't want to stink, and that even parents have to bathe. Any explanation longer than 4 words made them lose interest, but sometimes they gave in. I used logical consequences. I tried telling them that dirty kids are smelly kids and no one wants to snuggle with a smelly child, which I think of as natural or logical consequence. The problem was, when snuggle time came around and they hadn't had a bath, I couldn't possibly reinforce my earlier warning. I loved giving them hugs. Putting them to bed without snuggling during story time was impossible for me. I tried choices. Do you want to have your bath before supper or after? Would you like to have a bath or a shower? Do you want to bring the basket of toys or some from your room? I tried all kinds of choices. Sometimes they worked, but usually my daughter's response to every choice was, no bath. I tried reverse psychology. You don't want to have a bath. That would make you clean, and you wouldn't like that. You can't possibly beat me to the bathtub. I thought maybe I could confuse them by telling them that they didn't want to have a bath, but they simply agreed with me. I tried threats and brute strength. When my kids were really little, I calmly continued with bath time despite their cries of protest. I was gentle but firm and simply put them in the tub. As they got bigger, this did not work, as kids can stop the descent into the tub, no matter how hard you try to hold all of their limbs together into one package. That moved me to threatening, "Get in that tub right now." This took far too much energy, rarely worked, and I never felt good doing it. I tried letting them drive. After many successful and unsuccessful strategies for getting my kids to bathe, I gave up and I let them decide how often they got in the tub. I would tell them if they were smelly or if their hair looked greasy, but in the end, the decision was up to them. I'm happy to report that as teenagers, both my kids are regular with their showers and put time and effort into their self-care. Had I backed off when they were younger, they might have had less reason to resist, and this struggle could have ended much sooner. On the other hand, they might have still resisted and become the dirtiest, smelliest kids around. Understanding our response ability. The way we parent, the things we enforce, and the way we enforce them should all complement our job description of parenting. If, for example, we want our children to learn how to think, we need to give them opportunities to figure things out. If we tell them what to think instead, "You will do it because I told you to and I'm your parent," we are not being consistent with our goals. One of the biggest concerns I have with our societal message for children today is the inconsistent message we give in the area of responsibility. By having laws that allow people to blame others for their mistakes or accidents, we are teaching that responsibility for our actions lie outside of ourselves. For example, if I was to go to your place and slip on your wet floor, it is not your fault that I fell down. Fault does not lie with the company that made my shoes, the people who made the flooring, or Mother Nature for providing the water. I fell down. If anyone has to take responsibility for that, it's me. But accidents happen. It's nobody's fault, you might say. So let's look at another example. Let's say I'm 12 years old and my parents drop me off at a store for an hour to hang out with a couple of friends. A half hour later, my parents are called and told I'm in the security department, having been caught shoplifting. Is that my parents' fault for trusting me on my own for an hour? Is it my friend's fault since they have a history of bad behavior and obviously led me astray? Is it the store's fault for having so many lovely things out there that I could take? No, it is my fault for stealing. Unfortunately, our society likes to blame the parents, and often the parents will transfer the blame to someone else, like to my friends, for instance. When this happens, I learn that my bad choice is actually outside of my control and therefore not my fault. Our legal system and our current way of thinking are set up to teach our children they do not need to take responsibility for their actions. It is also set up to cause many parents to distrust their children and fear their child making a mistake. We can teach our kids how to take responsibility for their own behavior by practicing things like the following. First, model responsibility taking. When our kids hear us talking about someone who made us so mad we lost it, or the traffic that made us late, or how we wouldn't have backed over their bike if she hadn't left it out, they are learning how to put off responsibility. It is partly the child's fault that her bike got run over. But accepting our part in the accident will teach a child far more than any finger pointing. For example, "I'm so sorry I ran over your bike. I really wish it hadn't been behind my car." Another thing you can do is let bygones be bygones. Sometimes it is important to know what led up to the situation at hand. Other times, not so much. Whenever possible, put your focus on what has happened and what can be done to fix it, rather than harshly asking for a reason. When you must get more information, do it as respectfully and non-judgmentally as possible. I'll actually be talking about this in a later chapter, chapter 11. So if you don't have an idea how to do that, tune in for that reading. So going back to putting focus on what can fix it, rather than harshly asking for a reason, you might say, I'm really disappointed my lamp is broken. What's our rule about throwing things in the house? Another thing you can do is focus on your child's role in the situation. When our kids come up with a reason they are not responsible for something that went wrong and we shift our focus with them, we are rewarding them for not taking responsibility. Even if it was the neighbor boy who threw the rock at the window, we are best off to acknowledge this information and return to our child's involvement in the situation. For example, I understand Jack was the one who threw the rock. Now let's talk about what you're going to do to make up for your part in breaking Mr. Jones' window. We need to teach our children, starting from a very young age, to take responsibility for what they have done. If we believe mistakes are an opportunity to learn and grow, then taking responsibility for an error is not a bad thing. Responsibility lies within us. Have you ever noticed that two or more people can be in exactly the same situation, yet respond in a totally different way? This is because there is a gap between the incident and how they respond to that incident. This gap provides an opportunity for us to choose how we will respond in any situation. Sometimes that gap feels so small that it seems as if our response was automatic and therefore outside of our control. But this is never the case. When something happens to us, that's called a stimulus, there is always an opportunity, which is the gap, for us to choose how we will react, which is our response. So you could write this out as stimulus with an arrow towards a gap with an arrow towards a response. I learned about this from Stephen Covey in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families. This is important for us to understand and to teach to our children. If someone does something and we feel angry, our body is signaling us that something might be wrong. The stimulus, what that person said, did not cause our anger. The stimulus or event is always neutral. The same comment that made you angry might make another person smile or feel nothing at all. There is nothing right or wrong about the feeling we have in response. It is what we do with that signal that can cause a problem. So no matter how it might seem, that person did not create our feeling. Something in us did. When a strong emotion like anger shoots through us, it is hard to find the gap and take advantage of the opportunity it provides. When I'm working with students, I like to teach them a simple word, for example, whoa, to throw into that gap when they are emotionally upset. This increases the size of the gap and provides them more time to come up with their response. Some people find it easier to shift their focus to a part of their body. So, for example, focus on your feet rather than use a word. Any trick that helps them stop the flood of emotion so that they can think more clearly is beneficial. The gap is always there. We just have to use it. Once a person has mastered recognizing this gap, he is now in a position to choose his response. Sometimes he will choose badly, but at least he did it with awareness. What's important is that he understands he chose his response and now needs to take responsibility for it. Once responsibility is accepted, there is plenty of learning that can take place, but without it, nothing good can happen. Crooked thinking, or believing that others are to blame for your actions, allows people to bully, abuse, and engage in other hurtful behaviors. It is our job as parents to help our children recognize that their actions always belong to them. By taking control of our own actions, especially when we'd rather blame others, we are taking advantage of the gap and role modeling true response ability. Free parenting tip. Our children need to take responsibility for their actions, and we need to show them how. Being aware of the gap that allows us to choose our response helps with this task. Introducing parent power. Children are born with very little power and rely on us to dress them, feed them, bathe them, and put them to bed. If our baby refuses to eat or sleep, we understand that we cannot force him to comply. So we try different food, we shuffle the sleeping schedule, we rock the baby, we do everything we can to get him working with us. As our children get older and more verbal, some of us begin to lose our willingness to see it their way and start to insist they comply with our wishes. They continue to develop stronger opinions, and we become more and more determined to have it our way. Most times, we truly believe that what we are enforcing is necessary for our child's safety, health, or well-being. Other times, we know we are enforcing it because we are tired, irritated, embarrassed, or otherwise bothered. Parent power refers to the authority given to us as parents to enforce rules and boundaries with our children in order to teach them right from wrong. When it comes to an impasse in which our child simply won't see our side of the message and we aren't willing or able to go with his, parent power is what we use to get our way. It is about having the final word and is probably where statements like, "because I said so," or "as long as you're under my roof," came from. It relies on our children believing in our authority for it to work and is given to us based on the trust condition that we will use it appropriately. Unfortunately, there is plenty of opportunity to misuse parent power since it is basically unmonitored and we're not taught how to use it wisely. The trick with parent power is that it must be used by a calm, controlled parent. Used wisely, it helps us guide our children in making decisions, showing them we have their best interest at heart and earning their respect. This is important because as our children grow, their power increases until eventually we find ourselves relying on the respect we have built with them to gain cooperation. If we haven't used the early years to build this respect, things can get extremely challenging when our kids get older. Used positively, parent power is a backup to be used after other tools have failed. To illustrate, let's pretend you ask your daughter to come and clean up her crafts. She ignores you and sits down at the computer getting ready to play. You walk over, place your hand calmly across the keyboard, and assertively tell her, "I've asked you to clean up your crafts. Do that first, please." She starts to whine and fuss, insisting you remove your hand and saying she'll clean up later. Remaining calm, you give her an option, such as, "Clean up your crafts before playing on the computer, or the computer is off for the day, and you can go to your room while I clean up your crafts." She doesn't listen and angrily begins tugging at your hand. You pick her up and carry her to her room, calmly but firmly telling her she must stay there until she has calmed down and is ready to listen. In this situation, you have modeled assertiveness and option statements before using your parent power to enforce your instruction. The problem with parent power arises when we skip the learning piece and jump straight into getting our way. In other words, we ask or demand our child clean up her crafts, and when she doesn't listen, we make her do it. "That's it. You're off the computer for today and maybe longer if you don't smarten up. Clean up your mess now." To illustrate this point further, here's an example many of us can relate to. Imagine you are driving to an appointment and are behind schedule. Your kids are coming with you, although they really don't want to, and are arguing in the back seat. shooting them your I mean business look in the mirror, you growl, "If I have to stop this car." At this point, things can go a couple of different ways. One thing that could happen, ideally, is that the behavior stops. The kids understand the implied threat, are unsure what will happen if the car is pulled over, and are not willing to take a chance to find out. Your power has effectively worked. Although your kids have not learned anything useful and won't know how to apply this information to their next argument. Another thing that could happen is that the kids continue to misbehave, creating a serious problem. You've put out a threat that implies something bad will happen if you stop the car, and now you have to follow through. What the heck are you going to do? You're already late, the kids would be happy not to have to go, and you have no plan for what you're going to do once the car is stopped. In this situation, most parents will repeat the threat or start throwing out other consequences rather than actually following through and stopping the car. "Just wait till we get home. You guys probably think you're still going to the movie on the weekend." Well, let me tell you, if this happens, the kids have just called your bluff and have learned to challenge your threats in the future. Of course, some parents will be so angry that they will pull the car over and proceed to act. The problem is now the parent feels threatened. We hate having our power questioned. So they're angry and they're also late for their appointment. Overreaction is quite probable, which, if it involves brute force, could be crossing the line to abuse, a place where most of us would never willingly go. Anytime we overreact and lose it, we diminish our parent power. It is very difficult to respect a person who lacks self-control and uses her power unfairly. In fact, when we see other adults behave this way, our respect for them lessens. Knowing that we have this power and saving it for those times when we really need it allows us to work on building respect rather than forcing compliance. Our power is a gift. We should use it wisely. Free parenting tip. If we use our power to build respect and to guide our children, it will help us set a strong foundation for the years ahead. If we use our power only to get our way, it will cause us much grief and frustration. The choice is ours, and we do have the power to make a difference. A force not to be reckoned with. Consider these statements. "I don't want to go to bed. You can't make me. I hate peas. No bath." These are typical assertions made by kids. They start when our kids recognize they have some control over things involving their body and stop when we recognize that too. A power struggle refers to any time two people disagree on something and are both determined to get their way. Power struggles are not about negotiating, discussing, or thinking things through. They are about using power to get your way. Consider this example of a 3-year-old who has had a full day of tiring play and a parent who is equally exhausted. "Eat your supper," Mom says in an authoritative voice. "No, not hungry," responds Taylor, crossing her arms and closing her mouth tightly. "Eat it now or you're going to go to bed," Mom says, leaning across the table with a serious I mean business look. "No, not go to bed, not hungry," Taylor cries, laying her head on her arms on the table and sobbing. "You're getting your hair in your supper. Sit up or you are in bed for the night," Mom yells, standing up to her full height and quickly moving Taylor's plate out of the way of her hair. Taylor flops to the floor, kicking and screaming in full-blown tantrum. Mom picks her up and, with Taylor's limbs flailing, carries her to her room. This story can be repeated for bath time, clean-up time, or bedtime, and can take anywhere from 30 seconds to a few hours to build. Depending on the personalities of the people involved, this can begin to happen when the kids are very little. How we handle the situation can determine how often and for how long these incidents continue to occur. When we engage in a power struggle, things can only go one of two ways. One, we can win and thereby teach our children that as long as you're bigger, stronger, and louder, you can get your way. As a result, they crave more power. Or two, we can lose it and allow our children to learn how powerful it feels to win a battle of the wills, resulting in their craving more power. Our kids have nothing to lose and much to gain by engaging in these struggles. We, on the other hand, have much to lose and little to gain. So what can we do to avoid these struggles? Well, like most things in life, we prevent it by thinking ahead. That's all the time I have for today, so next week I will be sharing 6 ways to prevent power struggles and continuing on from there. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit VibrantPowerfulMoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.